Well, thank you for that, Mark, and good morning to you all. We, as I usually say, we enjoy coming down here and sharing around the Word of God. And that hymn this morning has special connections for me because, one, I like it, and the other is that we had this practice at Auckland Central, and we always sang it as the brother or sister came out of the waters of baptism. And we, at Auckland Central, we haven't had a baptism there for a long time, but we had a portable bath, and we had it outside in quite a nice setting. And it was just pretty special. And what was really special, I suppose it's probably the most special thing in my ecclesial life, was that over a seven-week period, we baptised 6 Chinese people. Now that sounds, that does sound fantastic, and it was fantastic, but let me say that it was the result of a lot of work of a lot of brothers and sisters over, you know, quite a long period of time. But it did, and rightly so in my opinion, it did act as a catalyst for other people to be baptised. And I can remember that there is this hesitation in people not wanting to be baptised. And their hesitation is that they don't know enough. And the reality of the matter is we never know enough, and we're always learning. And that leads me into the exhortation for today. Better keep to the script, because if I don't, I'll go over time. And the exhortation today is based on Matthew 25, and I've called it the Master Teacher. Jesus was the Master Teacher, and parables were an important part of his toolkit.
Excuse me, who's got the dog in the blue car?
Oh, I have.
It's screaming at
seven.
Thank you. Any of us. Any of us who have had children know the power of a good story. If one has not had offspring, the powerful learning medium of storytelling is also clear. Human beings generally like stories, and they are integral to many cultures. So why is this? It brings information and lessons to life. Humans, children and adults can usually relate to them. Stories help us to remember better, and parables fit this bill and more. So what are some of the features of the parable stories told by Jesus? Well, there's many, but this is not an exhaustive list, but they always had an intended audience, an individual or a group of people, e.g. a rich young man, the disciples, the Pharisees. The story was drawn from the culture and environment of the times. To the initial audience, the story would have been very familiar. What Jesus talked about would have been part of personal experience or observation. But they were imaginary stories, although very realistic. So care must be taken always to remember this. And they seem to me anyhow usually have an exaggerated element to them. Perhaps this is to highlight the point that they are only imaginary stories. They usually start in more modern versions of the scriptures. Suppose, or if you like, once upon a time. The main purpose of the parables of Jesus was to challenge the thinking and the attitudes of his audience and to encourage them, as Brother Mark said in his opening prayer, to make changes in our lives. And the same applies to the audience that reads them in any generation. What is the message for me? What are the lessons for me? The parable of the 10 virgins. A familiar story to us all. Today it's not my intention to go into this or any of the parable stories in much depth at all. Suffice it to say, to come upon a few obvious points. 5 were wise, 5 were foolish. In other words, 5 were acceptable and 5 were unacceptable. Oil is a key ingredient of the story. I've heard many possible meanings for this, and over time I can see points for and points against. But this, I think, illustrates how one can get bogged down in the details of the parable story and perhaps miss the point of the parable, which is so fundamental. Whatever the oil represents, and I certainly have my ideas, it was something that was available to all 10 reasonably freely at some point in time. And the point, I believe, of the story is that the 5 wise ones maximized their supply and the 5 foolish ones didn't. The wise seized their opportunities and produced fruitfully, and the 5 foolish didn't. It is clear from the parable that the day of opportunity does come to an end. The foolish were not able to buy or even acquire by transfer. Paul expresses it like this: redeem the time, because there will be time no longer, or something of that along those lines. This, I believe, is the main takeaway from this parable. Redeeming the time helps prepare us for the day when the Lord will call us, ready or not. The parable of the 3 servants immediately follows. Again, not a detailed examination of the details of this parable, but an overview type glance. It is clear that Jesus has gone away and has entrusted us with his truth. He expects us to be active in his work and will return one day as the rightful and righteous king. The parable story makes it apparent that each individual follower of Jesus is different. And as such, Jesus has different expectations of each. But he has expectations of all, or from all. Jesus expects us to do our best His commendation of the first two faithful followers indicates this. However, the third he not only describes as unfaithful, but as wicked. And I note from, I think it's the Authorised Version that Brother Sy read from, as also slothful. But note, he didn't squander his master's entrustment. He returned it intact. Therein was his first slip up. He did nothing. But much worse was to come. He didn't know his master. He didn't understand at all what Jesus was like. And Jesus was and is compelled to judge him according to his own yardstick. Some lessons in this short and simple parable are clear. Know Jesus intimately. Be diligent in his service. Treat others like Jesus treated people. The third section of Matthew 25 is roughly about the same length as the previous two parables. But it's not, well, I don't think it's presented like a parable. Perhaps you may see it with features there of parable presentation. And in this sense, there is a feature. There is the extraordinary features in this final section of Matthew chapter 25. I'm going to introduce this last section in a sort of story form, which I trust will help us to highlight its message. So, like a show of hands in a moment, who is familiar with the story of the little train engine called Tootle? Oh good, that's quite a few. So for those of us who are not familiar with the little train story called Tootle, it's in one of those golden books. He was an inquisitive little engine, and liked nothing more than to take his carriages for a journey into the countryside to enjoy the wide open spaces. It made him feel free, and he particularly liked the wildlife that he could see in the adjacent fields. And on one bright spring day, he got this urge to leave the train tracks behind and venture into the fields and get up close and personal with the beautiful butterflies, etc. And although he had been taught at engine school to stay on the rails no matter what, this urge, this certain day, got the better of him. So off the tracks he went. But to his surprise and dismay, once off the rails, and at every turn he made, red flags appeared before him, waving vigorously. He immediately realised that he had transgressed the rules of the engine training school. So he got back on the rails, and all the red flags ceased waving. He had learned his lesson, and he never deviated again. Now to the comments of Jesus. In the latter section of Matthew 25, we have a group that consider themselves to be dedicated followers of Jesus. I think I'm pretty fair in saying that. I think I'm quite fair in saying that they think they believe, follow and practice the truth as well as any human being could. They appeal to Jesus and claim that they have been completely committed to him all their lives. But Jesus replies, "I don't know you." They are flabbergasted. Unlike Tootle, they didn't realise they were not on the rails. The truth that they believed and practiced was a brand that was totally at variance with what Jesus taught, demonstrated, and he expected his followers to emulate. This whole section to me appears unbelievable, but it is not. They are the words of Jesus. There is an urgency about the words and message from Jesus, and you will note this in the tomorrow in the reading as well, and in Matthew 24 and 23 and 22 and 21 and 22, I think. Because the time was nigh, just a matter of days away, when he would be taken. 2,000 years has elapsed, but the same urgency applies for his readers. The bridegroom, the master, the king, is at the door. His coming again will be as the Lion of the tribe of Judah to execute the judgments written. And so this, I believe, is the message from Jesus. Let the ones with eyes see more clearly. Let the ones with ears hear more perceptibly. Let the ones with hearts respond more enthusiastically. And let the ones with big souls desire and action the ways of him we have met together again today to remember.